Hey, this is Rob Unspach, and welcome back to another edition of E-Heroes. My next guest, we haven't seen since episode 59. We're bringing him back. This is episode 187, and we're going to talk about closing high-priced deals. So welcome, Bengay III. And Ben, I'm just glad you're here. I'm honored that we could do this a second time.
Well, it's been a while. I thought maybe it was something I said.
No, it's probably something I said. You know, always offending somebody.
It's always a joy to be on and to watch you. I was telling Rob off camera, ladies and gentlemen, how much I enjoy his interviews, and I don't watch a whole lot of them. I'm on them all the time, but they're so solid. He did one the other day that I just tuned in long enough so I could praise him honestly, see enough of it to know it wasn't a clown show. And
that's just one.
And there are some of those. We've all had them. And it was so good. I think I watched every minute. I know I watched to the end. I don't know how late I came in, but you're just very, very good, Rob, and offer tremendously valuable material.
And that interview was episode 150 with Jocelyn Stewart. And she's a very dynamic military lawyer out of Tacoma. And so if you haven't listened to that one, please go back and listen and, enjoy it and read her books too. But let's talk about Ben, because Ben has been a master seller for before dirt was invented. And, he's been around and he's written a lot of great books. You know, the Closer series is sold millions. And, we were talking, and a lot of, my philosophy is the lower the price, the more hassles involved. And so, how do you close these high priced deals? Because, we look around in the media, we see, Elon Musk just throwing money at Twitter, and we see Donald Trump throwing stuff, money at big deals, big real estate deals, because they don't like to do anything small. But most entrepreneurs are so scared about upping their price or selling something, with value, that they're selling these little trinkets or making pennies.
I was telling Rob before we came on, my wife Gigi has a jewelry business, antique or vintage jewelry, and one of the little battles we've had, as successful as she is, she's become a jewelry expert and an eBay expert and so on. But one of the little battles we've had is she'll sell something for, I told him a particular story, $550. It takes exactly the same amount of time as a $12 pair of earrings. Mm-hmm. And I said, so why don't we sell more of the $550 stuff? We won't get as many sales. Well, divide 12 into 550. How many sales do you need to stay even? And slowly but surely, she's been raising her, not raising her prices so much as offering higher stuff.
Right.
And as you have mentioned numerous times, people who spend more don't give you a hassle. If there's a scratch on a $12 pair of earrings, she'll hear about it. And she reveals what it is. You go back to look at the description, it'll say there's a scratch on the thing. I found a scratch. That's the $12 customer. Mm-hmm. The $500 customer, the $1,000 customer never says a word. And lovely, I really like it, and so on. I have a consulting client we'll probably talk about here pretty quick. And when I sent them there, I've known him for years, but we deliberately didn't do business because I valued the friendship more than the business. And finally, we decided to merge the two. But I gave him a quote between books and consulting and coming down and doing a thing for their people live. It was about a $30,000 package for an hour of my time on stage or at the table. And I was talking to his executive assistant, a lovely lady, and I said, so how do we submit the invoice? And she said, well, I have your email. How much is it? And I said, whatever it was, $30,000, $35,000. And she said, all right, easy peasy, and bam. It was, if it had been $200, I'd still be talking to her.
Right.
Or if it was a $200 customer, I'd still be talking to her. There's an ease that comes with success, that the confidence that comes along with success. We were talking about Musk. I just, as we were coming on, he just offered to buy the rest of Twitter for $40 billion or something.
Yeah.
And Gigi, we were watching the news together. Gigi said, wow, 40 billion. I said, one of the things I've learned I'd like to pass on to your folks today, Rob, is don't let the zeros fool you. Mm-hmm. It's still the same transaction.
Right.
The fact that there's four, I don't know how many zeros there are in 40 billion, but a lot of them, 3, 6, 9, 10, 11, something. But it's still, the value is this. He's asking this, the difference is this. And if you knock off the zeros, it's, you know, I'm offering you $100 for your $80 stock.
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't bother you. Well, ignore the zeros. It doesn't change anything.
Yeah. You know, I lost my voice there. One of the things that I believe deep down though is, you know, sales becomes much easier when the customer feels safe.
Yep.
You know, it's not necessarily about trust. It's about being safe. And we're in this day and age now where all these people are so panicked because of, you know, of what happened to COVID. Customer service is just shot. But I find that when I approach somebody and I make them feel safe, it doesn't matter if I'm the asshole. As long as they feel safe with me, they're going to spend money.
Absolutely.
And you know, I look around and it's like people have overcomplicated their sales process, or they've overcomplicated their sales funnels on their websites or whatever they're doing. And it doesn't make people feel comfortable. It doesn't make them feel safe. There's no trust involved, you know, and then they wonder, why can't I make this $25 sale or this $5,000 sale? Or because there's, you know, people don't feel safe.
Shelley Berman, the old comedian, used to, back when 95% of all Americans had never been on an airplane, which isn't that long ago, believe it or not. He would talk about when he gets on a plane, he said he didn't want to see a spiffy, young, excited pilot. He wanted to see a guy with gray hair, mm-hmm. crushed hat from the earphones being on it for thousands of hours. Crinkles at the corner of the eye from staring into the setting sun for 10,000 hours flying the plane around. And he said, I want the feeling of daddy's going to take me flying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's safe. Yeah, that's coming on today and only picking up that one tip. I always say that people buy from people they know, like, and trust. From this day forward, I'm going to say, and feel safe with.
Yeah,
because that's the all-encompassing umbrella of the concept. I sell in my selling, whether I'm selling land in Arizona or a seminar or my books or consulting or somebody else's product or whatever, first I sell Bengay,
mm-hmm.
so that they feel safe. How long does it take to build a relationship? Oh, 5-10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You got a good toehold after 5-10 minutes.
Right.
I was selling pre-need, writing scripts for a pre-need cemetery funeral operation, and went out to test them. And they asked if a young man could ride along with me. I said, yeah, as long as he understands he's not to say a word unless I ask him. And then he's to answer with a yes or no. And then I explained that to him several times on the way to the 5 appointments we ran that day, and I got all 5. I think one had to do some financing or something, but anyway, it was 5 for 5, 4 for 5 cash in hand. And on the way back to the office, the guy said, and I'm thinking 45 minutes to an hour roughly per appointment. On the way back to the office, the young man said, Mr. Gay, it was an honor to be with you. I heard about you. I've read one of your books and so on. But I would have learned so much more today if these sales hadn't all been laydowns. I said, yeah, we turned them into laydowns. They weren't laydowns when we showed up. Strangers are coming to my door. They're salespeople. They're obviously, therefore, liars, cheats, and thieves to talk about my impending death. That's the setup. And they're laydowns? Right.
You know, I don't know if you remember the old Volvo commercials. I mean, I always thought Volvos were the ugliest cars in the world. And now there's more uglier cars. But at the time, Volvo, their commercials and their advertisements were all about the safety structure of the Volvo itself.
Right.
And it made people feel safe. They never talked about the engine. They never talked about, you know, anything else. They always talked about the safety cage.
Or that it was ugly.
Yeah. And back then,
those days, Volvo was not the prettiest car on the road.
and people buy, you know, they bought these cars. And you know, nowadays, you know, you look at the commercials that Volvo has, doesn't talk about safety. It doesn't talk about it, you know, it's the typical automotive commercial that's
just another car. It's just another car.
But you know, I think that a lot of the sales progress over the last few years has gotten away from safety, you know, convincing a customer to be safe with the product.
Yeah.
And it's all about price, or it's all about this, or and it's like, I don't care what you're selling the thing for. It could be $1 million. People will come up with the money if they value the product or feel safe with the product.
One of the first things I was taught in selling was sufficiently inspired. Just about anybody can come up with just about any amount of money.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I bought stuff, shiny objects. I try not to buy shiny objects anymore. Early on in my career, I bought all these shiny objects because I thought they're going to make me feel stronger, or make me more money, or do all they did. I just spent all this money on junk, you know, but people are still buying shiny objects that do nothing for them. I'm like, okay, just buy this ugly thing. Makes you feel safe, but it's going to benefit you so much better.
Yeah. Volvo used to do a thing. I don't remember how long it ran. But if you bought a Volvo, it came with a $1 million life insurance policy.
Wow.
If you were killed while driving it, and it was the fault of the car. I mean, it had some caveats in it,
right.
You know, steering wheel came off, you know, or whatever. If it was the fault of the car, at no charge, there was a $1 million life insurance policy. And I thought, whoa. Now we're talking belief in product, aren't we?
Right. Yeah. there is no belief in product anymore. And nowadays you buy a car, it comes with a 1-year warranty. Like 1 year.
So what do you know that I don't know?
And then the dealer is trying to sell you an upsell on you know, an extended warranty because he's going to make $4,000. And I'm like, 1-year warranty on a car. Yeah. And I'm going to spend $50,000 for.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we had this washing machine. I think it's been fixed 10 times under warranty. I'm like, you could have replaced it 5 times already. But they don't, you know.
Cute warranty story. When I opened the call center industry back in 1976, the type of ladies, generally ladies who came to work for us, were not always, and it made them wonderful people, but they were the type of people who maybe would have had a little trouble interacting in a face-to-face live situation. Mm-hmm. That's one of the ways I'm trying to find to say that they tended to be overweight. And I mean, we had, if there were 50 operators on the floor at any given time, 35 to 40 of them were what you would call obese.
Mm-hmm.
But no one saw them there, and they got to sit in their booth and take calls and make money, and everybody was happy. The downside of that was I bought those plastic mats for under every chair that came with a lifetime money back guarantee, and the yellow secretarial chairs, you've seen thousands of them, they come with a lifetime money back guarantee. And those two sales, actually it was one salesman with an office supply company, but two different companies. And they sent reps out to talk to us a couple of times, because when they offered their lifetime guarantee on the mat and the chair, they didn't know a 250-pound woman would be sitting in it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It never, you know, there were chairs in the, except they'd been replaced, there were chairs in our office that never got cold, never got cool, from the day we turned on the phones till the day I left the business 10 years later. Chair number 13 had always had someone in it, you know, except for a bathroom break. And the lifetime guarantee lost its charm for those people. And I said, well, tell your other customers how good you are about doing it and call me for referral and so on. But as for me, I bought lifetime guarantees for every position on this floor, and you will honor it, and which they did, to their credit. But I'm sure that today they have a little questionnaire. How much does your average employee weigh? How is this a 24-hour a day business, 7 days a week, you know, type thing? But anyway, I became an advocate for both companies because they did what they said they were going to do. And I didn't deliberately cheat them. I didn't know my people going to wear out chairs. It never crossed my mind.
Yeah. And ironically, I don't think there's too many companies left on this earth that still offer lifetime guarantees on anything that they produce.
You know, one, me, the closers comes with a lifetime unconditional guarantee, no questions asked. We do ask you to produce the receipt or something that you bought it with, because a couple of times people have gone to garage sales and picked up a copy for 50 cents and, you know, send me my $24.95 or whatever it was at the time. So that's the only little caveat. And here's what it does for you, Rob. It takes the, if we had a 30-day guarantee on the books, I guarantee you we would have had many returns.
Right.
Because the clock is ticking. I haven't gotten rich yet. Probably ought to send it back. So on. Unconditional, no questions asked, lifetime money back guarantee in the past, at least the last 25 years. And it's been out long. The original one's been out longer than that. We have had two returns. Grand total, two.
Yeah. And see that if more people understood the power of guarantees, And understanding that the ratio of returns versus ripoffs versus, you know, whatever you can imagine, the questions that you're going to think about never exist.
Absolutely. When I worked at Macy's, they had a theory, you know, because I saw somebody shoplifting something, and my instinct was to wrestle them to the ground. And they didn't call it human resources then, but some department, the employment department, somebody sent somebody up to talk to me. And their Macy's attitude then was 95% of our customers are absolutely honest to a fault. Let's not risk offending them for the less than 5% who may not be.
Yeah.
And
and then, of course, of my business, I think I've had to return money only a few times out of the last 27 years. And this is the various businesses that I've owned. And, you know, you cringe sometimes.
Yeah, sure.
Return money. Oh, man, that customer's a pain in the ass. But you know what? I would rather get rid of them than have to continue to deal with them.
Yeah. Cheap price to pay to get you out of my life.
Yeah.
I've returned money to a consulting client who didn't want it back. He said, no, I want to continue on. I said, I don't. I don't want to wake up in the morning dreading having to spend an hour with you.
Right.
So I'm just, here's your money back. Well, I'm not going to cash your check. I said, that's even better. But we're done.
you and I are done. You know, and that's the simplest way to deal with people. Get rid of them fast. And I know that for most entrepreneurs, getting rid of a client is not the easiest thing, especially when you need the money. But you know what? You don't need the hassles either. So fire them. There's always going to be a better client that comes around, and they're going to be ones that are willing to pay more money.
Yep.
You know, I had to get rid of a client, and this was my fault. You know, I hung on to this client a long time. He was a young guy, has a young kids. You know, he had a sad story, and I wanted to help him out. The problem is his price was as lowest I could give, and still kind of feel good about myself. But after a couple of years, it's like he would nitpick me about everything, call me every day. And I'm like, dude, you're not worth the time or money. Why do I still have you as a client? And eventually I had to cut the cord. And, you know, he wasn't doing the things that I was asking them to do. I'm like, you're not collecting emails. You're not sending reminders. You're not sending newsletters. He goes, yeah, but I'm relying on you. You're relying on me
to send the newsletters to do
this. And I'm not charging you enough to do all this stuff. I said, you got to go. And, a couple weeks later, I sent him an email. I said, look, sorry that things turned out the way they did. How's things going for you? He goes, I got a full-time job. And I'm like, why didn't you do this 5 years ago?
He shouldn't have given that up to start with.
Yeah.
That may have been the secret. The other thing, and I think about this often when I think of you, is some people hire you to tell them the truth and then get offended when you tell them the truth. I have a person, I won't say which gender, because he or she would know who I was talking about, who runs a large real estate company and wanted help in a variety of things, but among them, public speaking. And he or she thought they were very good at it. And in one of our second call, I said, now we got to work on the public speaking thing where you don't look quite so much like a robot at Fisherman's Wharf. And she said, well, what do you mean? I said, I remember the words clearly because it costs a lot of money, but like what we're talking about made it worth it. I said, you look like you're vying for third place in a regional Toastmasters contest. And she sort of, I saw her physically react, and then within a week appointments were broken and so on. And she had used up most of her initial retainer, so it wasn't anything where I had to call and ask for anything or vice versa, and she just drifted off. I see her around. She's still a pretty big deal in real estate, and I'm sure still a horrible speaker, but she paid me to improve her speaking abilities. Another young man from a wealthy family. He wasn't, but he's one of those people who will be carded in bars for the rest of his life. He's very young looking. He is very young, but he's very young looking on top of that. And I don't see any place where he's going to mature and get the wrinkles and anything. He showed up one day at one of his webinars in a goofy looking hat and a t-shirt with a neck pulled loose and so and so. So afterwards, how did I do? And I said, you have a problem starting out. You look too young. I wouldn't have hired you to mow my lawn till I got to know you. With today's performance, I would not hire you to mow my lawn. If you're stupid enough to draw in a few hundred people to watch you and you show up young looking, you can't help that, but maybe you could do something with makeup. I don't know. But with a stupid hat on and a dirty t-shirt, I think we've stumbled on the problem. I still hear from him about once a year socially. His father died recently, so I heard then. But he went away because I told him the truth, and I was hired to get him to be more effective and so on. So I found I have to make a decision two or three times a day. How do I phrase the truth? I'm in business to make money. I don't want them to all go away. But how do I tell them the truth and have them stay if that's possible? But anyway, the reason I thought of that was you with your, I thought I was sarcastic until I met you. It turns out I'm a Mormon Tabernacle Choir boy.
Well, it's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, no. Like you, I suspect I frequently hear things that I've said at the same time they hear it. There, you know, it went from subconscious to out mouth, skipping my filtering device.
there's no filter in here. No, it's I think it comes about. You know, my dad's very sarcastic, and the funny thing is, my granddaughter now is, she's 2 years old. She's just pure sass, and it's just, I'm like, oh great, now it's my fault.
But yeah,
but you know, let's talk about speaking, because you know, I've been up on stage. The first time it was awful. Second time got better. Third time, but you know, I was in Vegas. This was 7-8 years ago, and before I had this business, I most of my clients were carpet cleaners, you know, because I was in the carpet cleaning realm. So I'm standing up and giving this speech to a bunch of carpet cleaners in Vegas, and I don't have, you know, any of my slides. I don't, and they said, you got to stand behind the podium. And I always had this thing about podiums in high school. I couldn't pay. So I'm standing up there, and everything just went blank. And I'm like, I couldn't remember my name. It's a good thing I had my cheat sheet in my pocket, and I pulled it out and went, and I apologized to the whole crowd, and I'm just reading off my cheat sheet. And then I said, any questions? And everybody thought I was joking. And then they're like, yeah, we want to hire you.
You're so bad they thought you were joking. Yeah.
They saw me on social all the time, on videos and doing this. And I played it up. And I'm like, yeah. And then during the Q&A, I had to stand up with a bunch of other people. And I was just fine then. But standing behind that podium, forget it. It was like my kryptonite. And so from now on, you know, whenever I get up on stage, I'm like, yeah, I avoid that podium. I don't want to be fine. But, you know, it's, there's always going to be that one mess up that you do that will probably change how you do the rest of your speeches. But I embrace that failure. It's what I call kind of a failure, because it was a messed up. It was a misstep. It bugged me, you know, but instead of hiding behind it, I embraced it. I shared out. It's a story that people like, because I knew I messed up, but everybody else thought I was joking. So I was like, yeah, whatever.
Go with that.
Seriously. You know, I sold a bunch of stuff and a bunch of coaching but yeah, I'll never go back to Vegas.
I got inoculated 3 different times in front of large groups. One, going down to Atlanta, going from Atlanta to somewhere in Florida to address. I'm 23, just getting rolling, starting to make some money. And on the way down, one of my mentors and friends, Bill Dempsey, told me a funny story. I won't bore you with the story, but the punchline was Henry, Henry, Henry. And if you heard the whole setup, you know, I got hysterical. I mean, I'm one of those people who occasionally you'll find under the dining room table in a fetal position, howling at something. And once I get going, I can't stop. So anyway, it was Henry, Henry, Henry. I laughed from Atlanta, right outside of Atlanta, when he told me, all the way to Orlando, including being in a fetal position under the glove compartment of his big Lincoln. So we get there, I'm wrung out from laughing. And of course, he's goading me and telling me more of the story all the way. I get up on stage. I think somebody went before me, I guess, because I got introduced. I go up on stage, turn around, and there's Dempsey on my left and backing away from him, unrolling butcher paper. He's holding the butcher paper is Jimmy Rucker, my running buddy, the best salesman I ever worked with. He's unrolling butcher paper. And when he gets to the other side of the room, in huge letters, I don't know how they did it that fast. I was just changing my clothes in the room. It says, Henry, Henry, Henry. I collapsed on stage, Rob, went right to my knees, laughing hysterically. And they came up and got me, picked me up after they saw I wasn't going to recover, picked me up under my arms and dragged me, you know, toes down to the back of the room. And as I'm passing people sitting at the end of the various rows at the tables, I'm looking at them, looking for support and help. I'm going, Henry, Henry, Henry. And people are backing away going, yeah, all right, Henry, Henry. And they dump me in a wicker chair out in the lobby and go back and finish the meeting while I'm sitting out there giggling like a lunatic by myself. You cannot get to me on stage today. Cannot do it. I don't care what you do. Bring in the 10 funniest people on earth and have them strip naked and do a dance. Nothing will get to me. I was inoculated. A year or two later, I'm moving up in the company now. I go to the Park Sheridan Hotel in New York and I'm introduced by, you might know him, a lot of your viewers won't, Earn Westmore. He was the dean of Hollywood makeup artists. He used to be on the Art Linkletter show all the time doing makeovers. He was vice president of the company I was about to become president of. His beauty and fashion was his niche. And he told me he had a heart problem over lunch. And then as we're leaving the Carnegie Deli, which went out of business recently, much to my chagrin, as we're leaving the Carnegie Deli to walk to the hotel, he said, would you mind if I introduced you tonight? And I said, no, I'll be honored. Called my mother, said, Earn Westmore is going to introduce me tonight. And she said, no, he's not. I said, what do you mean, no, he's not? I just had lunch with him. No, you didn't. I was still her little boy. I wasn't hanging out with Earn Westmore. Earn gets up on stage, 5,000 people in the room. 500 was the one I collapsed in front of. This is 5,000. Two balconies above the main floor. And he does his thing. And then he gives me a laudatory introduction. And he says, and ladies and gentlemen, I believe the next president of Holly Magic Cosmetics, my good friend, Benjamin Franklin Gay III. And before the D on third came out of his mouth, he dropped dead on stage, like he'd been shot with a buffalo gun or an elephant gun or something. I mean, he didn't faint. Even I knew that's not a faint. That's a dead. He was dead before he hit the floor. So now he's died in front of 5,000 people. And I'm up. The spotlight is on me. He just introduced me. So they carry him out and so on. And the only thing that saved me was God for a moment. As they got near the edge, I said, gentlemen, the ETs or whatever they call them in those days, I said, hold on just a second. I said, ladies and gentlemen, I had lunch with Earn Westmore today. And I asked him, because he was taking heart pills. He told me he had a heart problem. I asked him if he had to go, how would he like to go? And he said he wanted to go in front of a large crowd talking about beauty and fashion. And he accomplished it. Let's give him one last standing ovation. They stood and I heard later, you could hear it through much of the hotel, 5,000 people screaming, giving him his last standing ovation. He goes out the door and it's back to me. I'm thinking, okay, what do you do now? I was supposed to give a scripted meeting. So I said, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ben Gay. I'm a general distributor with Holly Magic Cosmetics, blah, 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 for 47 minutes. Went to the close. We had about 5,000 people in the room. 2,500 would be prospects, roughly. Under those circumstances, I would expect to close 40%. We closed 90% that day. So they said, well, people asked me, what'd you learn from that? And I said, well, if you can get an elderly, famous person to introduce you who is willing to die on stage. And it's tough. You know, you can't run a want ad for that, but if you can find one. Rob, if you had a heart attack or suddenly struck with some dreaded disease like you were with COVID not too long ago, and I was following you, wouldn't be a problem. I've been inoculated. And then you're talking about forgetting your notes. I'm introducing at the international convention. There was an actor named Jeffrey Hunter. I just made the same mistake. Jeff Hunter, He was Christ in King of Kings, a strikingly handsome man. And he had just done our new company film that we would show at opportunity meetings. And he was in the audience. And I had two lecterns to work from. The one on stage right, I introduced new products that were coming up, a couple dozen new products on big giant screens. Stage left, I had my notes at that lectern for the names of the people I had introduced over the course of the day, probably a couple of hundred people by name. Notes were important. So I'm over at the product lectern and heading for the other one, and the lights go out in the Long Beach Arena. The lights go out, and somehow or another, waiting for the power to come on, I wound up at the wrong lectern, and it's time to introduce Jeff Hunter. And I look down at my notes, and it says cleansing cream, you know, eye stuff. And I'm almost 80 feet on this huge stage. I'm 80 feet away from the notes, which has his name. And the truth is, I'd never heard of him. I guess I didn't see the movie, or if I did, I didn't know the star's name or something. So I began to guess. And now, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to meet a man that you're going to see five nights a week in your hometown, because you're going to show the film and he's in it. And I go on and on and on about the movie, thinking to myself, come on, God, give me his name. And finally, I said, ladies and gentlemen, his name was Jeff Hunter, remember? Ladies and gentlemen, Jeffrey Humphreys. And one of the top executives in the company was behind me on one of those stages where the VIPs sit. And he says, Hunter, you idiot. You idiot. You know, and I said, Jeffrey Idiot. He couldn't have become more. And my wife at the time, she's now passed away, was sitting next to him in the audience. When we got up to the room, she just laid into me. She said, I get a chance to meet a handsome movie star and sit next to him, and you screw up his name in front of 15,000 people. So again, if I go up on my lines or whatever, I'm inoculated. You can try and crack me up. You can't do it. I've opened my notepad, notebook on many lectures over the years, and the first page says Henry, Henry, Henry. I tear the page out, wad it up, and turn to whoever I suspect did it. Said, nice try. I've had nobody die on me, but I've had other horrible things happen over the years. Can't get to me. And if I don't remember your name, I now, when I go on stage, say, it's funny, I would go into selling. I can't remember names. And I'm face blind. I really am face blind, Rob. I know you here because this is where I always see you. If I bumped into you in the grocery store and you said, hey, Ben, how are you? I'd have to say, help me here. I'm face blind.
So I'm in the grocery store and I don't know who you are.
You have to, you know, if you have a built-in objection, bring it up first and brag about it.
And see, you know, for everyone that's listening, you know, the stories that Ben tells you, you know, these are real life. These things happened, but don't they make you feel safe? Don't they make you feel comfortable? Don't they make you feel that you just want to open up your wallet and say, Ben, take my last dollar? I mean, and that's the whole point of sales. It doesn't have to be complicated. You can share your stories just like Ben is. And if you can connect to people through laughter, through sarcasm, I mean, you'll see that in all my books, it's all about sharing stories. You know, you're going to end up getting those sales and you really didn't have to work for it.
Yeah, for, as we've discussed, I first sell Ben Gay. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, Rob, there was a thing, they probably still have it, but I don't take the magazine, but my mother took Good Housekeeping. Mm-hmm. And they had the Good Housekeeping seal of approval. And she and most of her friends would not buy a product that, if they had any choice at all, that didn't have the Good Housekeeping seal of approval. What I've done from that lesson is learn the value of the Ben Gay III seal of approval. Mm-hmm. Most of my selling is about me, storytelling, etc. The product is really towards the end. They know why I'm there, but it's towards the end. And at the end, My Little Secret of Selling, the reason I have an 86% closing rate and have for 30 years is I put the Bengay seal of approval on it. My big close, I've written 24 books, I think, on selling between ghostwritten and my own name. And they have hundreds of closes in it. Here's the close I use.
Right.
I spend 30 minutes or so setting up the relationship, let him know that they know, like, and trust me, and now feel safe with me. And then I put the Bengay seal of approval on it. And here's my killer close. Based on what you've told me, Rob, here's what I suggest we do. Fill in the blank. Fair enough. Now, occasionally that smokes up one more question or, yeah, but I want to know or whatever. But by and large, that's it. 86% closing ratio.
That's now, incredible.
Before that, I have another secret. I cheat when I sell. I cheat when I sell a product. I only sell products I sell quality products and services that are competitively priced, don't have to be the cheapest, frequently the most expensive, but they're competitive compared to their value. And I spend my time talking to people qualified to buy it, religiously, financially, geographic, whatever. If you can't buy it, I don't waste the time with you.
Right.
So I qualify, don't prejudge, but I qualify. So by the time I get around, just picture a sniper in a tree. I have two friends that were military snipers. There are people who go bird hunting with a shotgun, you know, Cubby takes off, boom, 90% of their shot does nothing. A few, if they're in the general direction of the covey of whatever it was, hit a bird or two and they say, I'm a great hunter. But their failure rate was 95% or more. They got a bird, but 95% or more failure. My sniper friends sit in a tree for a day, two, three, and except for blinking their eyes occasionally, they don't make a move. And when the people come by, they pick out the one they're supposed to get, the guy with the stuff on his shoulder, the stars or whatever. Mm-hmm. If you ever go to war, don't wear stars on your shoulder and go out. They pick him out and or the last guy in line, because from 1500 yards away, you won't hear the gunshot. So when he drops, you might not even turn around. Mm-hmm. And then the next one drops and the next one drops and so on. So in sniper school, I learned how to be a better salesman. I'm a sniper. I don't ask for the order until I know the answer. And I feel an atmospheric pressure change when you've made up your mind, even though you haven't told me. It's like somebody opened a door behind me. You can feel the change in the room. I feel an atmospheric pressure change when you're ready to buy. And then and only then do I fire. And the 14% I don't get, which, by the way, I figure over the years, about 14,000 people have listened to the Bengay presentation and said no. So one of the things you got to do is get over the fear of rejection. I don't fear it anymore. I'm inoculated. 86,000 have said yes. 14,000 have said no. Next. Is to have the patience to be right, not just, give me your money. By the time, frequently, before I ask the closing question, they have out their credit card, checkbook, contract, or something. They've made the decision. We're at the logical conclusion. Now, we started out talking about fear of selling high-priced stuff. Just like anyone listening to this who's in selling, you feared asking for any order the first few times. Any order. Fear of rejection, fear of the unknown, fear of whatever. That's all it is in high ticket selling. You're back to the ground zero, like when you first started selling. Once you ask or direct them to spend the money, don't let the zeros confuse you. Nothing has changed. There's not a significant difference between selling a multi-million dollar investor package. Some of my friends in the investment banking business, no difference between a multi-million dollar package like that. I saw one the other day. I had a little light hand in for $30 million, I think it was. The techniques were exactly the same as when I'm teaching people how to sell Kirby vacuum cleaners. And when I was selling food choppers in the housewares department at Macy's, everything's the same. Don't be afraid to ask. If you don't ask, the answer is always no. And don't let the zeros fool you.
Yeah, and be confident in your ability, because I've noticed that people starting out in business are they're afraid to raise their prices. They say, well, we need customers. Most customers have no clue if you've been in business for a day or 10 years. Yep. So charge them what you need to charge them, and don't be afraid to do it.
Absolutely. When I was in the cosmetic business, I've been in and around it off and on for 40 years. And people say, well, you know, I remember when I started in Holiday Magic Cosmetics many years ago, there were 1,500 other licensed cosmetic companies in the United States. There's probably more than that now, but 1,500. And people say, well, when I go to the door, I'm up against 1,500 people. You know, we call them holiday girls, like an Avon lady, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, you're not. When you're on their doorstep, you're the only cosmetic company on earth. They're not comparing you to Mary Kay or Revlon or whatever. It's you and your product, and will it make them look better, feel better, smell better? That's it. Cosmetics is sex. Understand what you're selling. Sex comes in a jar, but it's sex.
And that we have to end the show with, because we're all running out of time. But this is what makes Ben not only any hero, but a sales hero to millions of people out there. You know, I enjoy his stories. We could go on and on and on and probably do, you know, an 8-hour show, and it would feel like just 5 minutes had passed. Ben's just filled with stories. And where can people go to learn more about you or buy your books?
Great question. What you can do. Can't believe it has been moved. Well, I'll just say that. Oh, here we go. There's my website, but don't go there. You're welcome. You're welcome to. But at the lower one, where it says stores.ebay.com/Ronzoni Books, R-O-N-Z-O-N-E Books, B-O-O-K-S. Pause your player and look at that again if you have to. By the way, this is high tech.
People are calling.
I scotch taped it to the thing so I would have it. Go there, and we have
it's a scammer anyway.
Special pricing and free shipping. At that website, they will sell it to you for less than you can get it at my website. Or if you call me, I'll bump you up times 10 over what you intended to do, and you'll pay full price. So you don't want to call me. Go to that website.
Free shipping. He's not even selling himself.
free shipping and special pricing. How can they sell it for less than you sell it, Ben? Well, notice the name, Ronzoni Books. Ronzoni was Gigi's maiden name. That's her little store. And the way she can sell it for less than I sell it is she goes into the warehouse and she steals her inventory. So she doesn't have product costs like I do.
And then
she slips it into our shipping department and we pay to ship it. It's not right, Rob. I'm telling you, I'm going to marriage counseling.
Oh, there you go. So everybody buys books so he can afford marriage counseling. And we'll see you on the next episode. Adios.
Rob, a pleasure being with you.